we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Royal Geographical Society's 1992 annual report.
A new initiative in 1992 was the Thomas Cook RGS Schools Travel Writing Awards. The first prize went to Rosanna Lowe from Kenilworth School in Warwickshire for Spittle and Spunk, a short spell with nuns in Nepal.
Thank you, Roger Dunkley of Putney, for spotting that. My word. Now, let's make the teams. Will you please welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and writer and comedian Andy Hamilton. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran with MP Tony Banks. Before we start round one, here's a cutting from The Guardian.
When two members of the tactical support group at Islington arrested a man for a public order offence, they had to nick his unmuzzled pit bull terrier too. PC John Phillips asked the prisoner if he'd fulfilled the law and obtained a third-party insurance policy for the animal. The prisoner looked baffled and protested he doesn't drive.
Well, thank you to T. Gallagher from Halifax for sending us that. Francis, where is a tender problem being investigated?
Tender? Well, it's obviously something to do with tendering.
Yes.
Could it be... Well, I mean, all sorts of people tender for things these days. Since everything's privatised, Group 4 is usually the answer to the question.
Well, so it's not in this case.
In this case, it's somebody else who's tendered
well,
for a government job.
Whoop, whoop, whoop. Oh, yes, yes, it's...
Sorry, you... you in pain?
That was either a warship... or a swan.
I thought your impression, I thought they're going to privatise bird life sanctuaries. Is it to do with Swan Hunter?
Of course it is.
Oh, I'm right. Well, what was the whooping for? The whoop was the swan, was it?
Yes.
Or, right.
And the hunter, can we have that?
I think psychiatric help might be.
Yikes, tell you how!
Right.
This is Tyneside Swan Hunter, who lost a vital shipbuilding order from the MOD amid allegations that tender conditions were less stringent for their competitor. Sir John Bourne, the public spending auditor, spent his first day flicking through the MOD's order books for Swan Hunter, but then had to take a day off with snow blindness. Andy, welcome back to the programme. Your first question is, who kept a diary of cabinet affairs that weren't?
Right, now this is God's gift to women, Alan Clark, who actually endeared himself to me because in his diaries he refers to Kenneth Clark as Mr. Pudgy Puffball. So obviously there's some kind of sexual thing going on between the two Clarks there. And he's written these diaries which were meant to be sort of very explosive, but as far as I can see, they're just lots of bits of him going in and complaining to people.
And fancying his secretary.
Yes, and he broke civil service rules, because if you fancy your secretary, you're not supposed to reveal their name.
Anyway, this is the publication of the diary of Alan Clark, former Minister of Employment, employment in the Iraqi Big Guns Export Company, that is. Details of Mr. Clark's activities in office apparently reveal him to be nothing more than an ignorant philanderer, although he denied the charge, saying he'd never had any interest in stamp collecting. Thank you. Tony, welcome back to the show. Now, here's your first question. How was KC attacked by the PCs, but not on the QT?
That's old Puffball, what's his name? Kenneth Clark, who got mugged at the police officers' conference. They gave him a good going over, and he thoroughly deserved it.
Free when I was young, the cop was just gave a Home Secretary a good clip round the ear.
Yes, it's all about the leader of the Police Federation, Sergeant Mike Bennett, who was reported as making a vicious verbal attack on Kenneth Clark, although later reports said that the Home Secretary insulted himself going down a flight of stairs. The Federation said that under Mr. Clark, police were working with one arm tied behind their back, unless they were senior officers, of course, in which case it's one trouser leg tied up above the knee. Sergeant Bennett also described Mr. Clark as a rude and arrogant snob. It's the most accurate description the police have issued for years. Alan, your first question and our first piece of music.
So far, we're gonna go gaga. My baby loves gaga. that she said yes, yes, instead of no, no.
Your question is, Alan, what has got rid of stubborn Danes to leave things clear?
It's simply that the Danes have agreed to embroil themselves in this piece of nonsense, and this will pave the way for Britain to make even more mistakes.
If they actually hadn't said yes this time, after having said no the first time, it was going to be best of five.
They'd have worked it out with penalties, would they, in the end? Yes, this was in Denmark, where a second Maastricht referendum was held. Referendum is one of those new Euro words. It means system of democracy, whereby the Danes go to the polls to decide whether a Dutch treaty written by the French is acceptable to the British. And if they give the wrong answer, they're made to do it all over again. And the scores at the end of the first round are for all. We start round two with an item from the Sussex Courier.
Lakeside Restaurant in Kemsing combines a cheerful, informal atmosphere with excellent food and wind.
Thank you, Jeff and Myra Lewis from Wadhurst Eats Sussex for sending us that cutting. Francis, here's our next question. Who won the skirmish and donned the gown of equality?
This is the Women Dons of Oxford.
Right.
Who voted to block 15 professorships.
Absolutely.
Because they thought that if they didn't block them, these jobs would all go to men. And they thought it would be better to spend the money on employing women as readers. Perfectly true, not very funny. But that's what's happened. And yeah. Roy Jenkins, who's the Chancellor of the University now, has to obey this because he's been outvoted. So he's going off to Casablanca this weekend for an operation.
I don't like to ask, but what sort of operation is it?
Never you mind.
This refers to women dons at Oxford University who scored a victory in their fight for better promotion prospects by blocking the appointment of 15 new male professors. Some women dons celebrated the decision by getting drunk and sleeping with their students. Keep that up and they'll definitely be in line for an Oxford professorship. Andy, who wants to do a good PR job even though he doesn't like it?
This is John Smith, the Labour leader, who has said that he personally doesn't believe in proportional representation, but he's quite prepared to have a referendum just to see what everybody else thinks.
He's a very fair man. His car was stolen this week, and he personally isn't a car thief, but he thinks it's fair that other people should be allowed to steal cars.
Yeah.
But they feel that
it was a red car, which was the only red thing we had left in the I think the thief returned it when he found that it couldn't steer left.
I think we should have referendums on everything. We don't have government at all. We all have little buttons in our homes and, you know, they put it out and tell you, what do you think of this? Bzzz, there you go. It'd be a new game show. Does the country think? It'd be as efficient as the system we got at the moment.
Like it or not, this is about Labour leader John Smith, Scotland's little yin, who announced he would introduce electoral reform for both his party and the voting public, an idea almost as radical as his surname. The decision to change the old block vote system came after a union lunch when the General Secretary of the TUC put his hand up to call the waiter and found that he'd ordered 2 million cups of coffee. Tony, here's a piece of music for you.
From the hustle and the bustle of the city, we'll become a pair of country folks. In a little cottage sitting pretty, we'll be Mr. and Mrs. Dokes. Take me where the daisies cover the country lanes. We'll make hay while the sun shines. We'll make love when it rains.
Well, that was We'll Make Hay While the Sun Shines by Billy Merrin and the Commanders. Tony, your question is, whose less than good offices were counted in the country?
There is a suggestion going round that all sub-post offices are going to be closed down, as they say, allegedly. Peter Lilly has assured us that this isn't so, and, of course, if Peter Lilly says so, it must be true. So they probably are going to close down. And it means that poor old pensioners who use sub-post offices to go there and have a good chat about the goss in the village will now just have to go and cash their cheques down at Barclays Bank or wherever. And they'll all feel very miserable and die, and that, of course, will reduce the amount of money that the government spends on pensions. And that's what they're trying to do.
There'll also be a sawn-off shotgun mounting, won't there, I think, if they close up.
They go
can
around
you knock
the
over a main post office with a balaclava helmet?
I thought Barry should have done an impression of a sub post office to help him.
Closing down.
Yeah, because that was very helpful before. Yeah.
This was John Major's promise that the rural sub-post office is safe in his hands, thereby ensuring jobs for many years to come in the balaclava industry. So the aged won't now have to go to a building society after all, not unless they want to take out a loan for a prescription, of course. Rumble, rumble. Alan, your question now. Whose reputation was ploughed up down on the farm? Would you like me to repeat it?
No.
Ask for an impression.
Well,
Moo.
Is it not the one about the flying sheep and the tornado?
No. If it had been that, I would have gone, ah,
this is a sour question.
It's about the enormous great forms that farmers have now got to fill in order to fiddle the EC... subsidy. I didn't mean fiddle, but claim the EC subsidy. And well, they say it takes too long.
Yes. The Ministry of Agriculture sent out instructions to its local offices saying that farmers are all basically dishonest.
Yes.
And you mustn't trust them an inch. And don't leave the room if you're in the room with a farmer, because they'll steal the teaspoons.
It said, don't leave them alone with the form. You thought, what are they going to do with
they
it?
They might finish it.
Yeah. They sang it. They said, how are you going to keep them down on the form? However, it's the company I keep. It's the Ministry of Agriculture memo which claims that farmers are rude, bad-tempered, untrustworthy, boorish, cuddly toy, spice rack, and will often fake illiteracy to avoid filling in forms. Meanwhile, to show there's no hard feelings, a farmer has invited the memo's author round to his holding, where the civil servant has been promised a friendly pat on the head. Ooh. Splosh. And... scores at the end of the second round, quite interesting, because Alan and Tony have scored 8, but Francis and Andy are in the lead with 9. We start round 3 with an item from the Grimsby Evening Telegraph.
Tory group leader Councillor Philip Jackson gave Councillor Perkins a stern verbal dressing down in a confidential letter sent to every group member.
Thank you, Walter H. Postons of Grimsby, for passing that cutting on to us. Now then, Francis, what idea went round in circles before falling on stony ground?
Stonehenge.
Stony ground, Jocelyn Stevens.
Stonehenge.
Well, Jocelyn, the English Heritage has had this plan to move the visitor centre, as it's called, at Stonehenge. That's
the toilet.
This dreadful place, this sort of hut. And they also want to move the road, the A, whatever it's called. That drive, it was very nice if you drive along there, you can see Stonehenge, and they want to move that so nobody can see Stonehenge without paying. That's the secret policy. They say it's because they want to improve the look of the place, but actually they don't like the idea that people from their cars can see it without paying entrance fees. That was what they were going to do, but they've now changed their mind and they've now cooked up all sorts of other schemes, and they basically haven't a clue what they're going to do with Stonehenge.
Aren't they thinking
of
moving?
But the one possibility they're not considering is not having a visitor centre. They think it's very important to have a sort of hut selling gifts and cuddly toys and things besides Stonehenge. That improves the look of the place, but they must get rid of this road.
Yeah. Well, if you don't know, why didn't you say?
Do you know that they're thinking of moving it, though? They're thinking of actually relocating Stonehenge to somewhere where, you know, you can really maximise the commercial possibilities, like the West End, you know?
Well, they did that with Eros in Piccadilly Circus, and that was a great success. It's never been seen since. Euro Disney has put in a bid, I think, as well.
Well, that'll be fun. Eurohenge.
This is English Heritage, who abandoned plans for a new visitor centre at Stonehenge because they couldn't get planning permission. If the local authority find out they didn't get building permission for Stonehenge either, the whole lot will have to come down. The next plan is to remove the road to the site, which will at least stop the annual invasion of hippies. Every year, hordes of noisy weirdos in odd clothes congregate at the site and make an awful racket as they arrest the hippies. Now, Andy, here's your piece of music.
I'm a lover, can't judge the book by looking at the cover.
Whoa. Well, that was Bo Diddley singing You Can't Judge a Book by Looking at the Cover. Andy, what wasn't given the stamp of approval after unusual marks were brought to book?
Librarians who are fed up with their image as not being sexy, clued up, turned on people, produced a survey of all the things that people use as bookmarks that they found in library books, some of which were too disgusting
to go
into. But apart from those, they also found bits of bacon were very popular, apparently. And one was a letter asking for an overdue library book, which I thought was rather... And I can't remember what other...
Kippers.
Kippers, yes. That's just obviously, you know,
But it was the condom.
Oh, you've seen it.
You've got it.
But what was also very funny was that in their survey, the least borrowed book, which hadn't been taken out of the library since 1958, was Gay Bulgaria.
Yes, which, for those who wish to know these things, is a travel guide and not the autobiography of a Camp Womble. You're absolutely right in every particular. It's a librarianship report which was issued this week, which revealed Britain's favourite impromptu bookmarks included a rasher of uncooked bacon found inside a copy of the Maastricht Treaty. Anyway, press merrily on to Tony. And Tony, your question is this. Whose travel staff were told to take a trip?
This is President Clinton's travel staff. I think they've been on the fiddle. Trying to help farmers fill in their EC forms. And like a lot of things, because they bounce checks and all sorts of things over in the United States. And so, in good democratic style, he's moved yet another one of his relatives into the White House, and that relative is now looking after the travel arrangements of President Clinton and Hillary and his little daughter, Queen's Park Rangers.
Pretty close. It is the leader of the USA and her husband, Bill, who sacked the entire... who sacked the entire White House travel department. Accusations against the staff include financial irregularities as well as frequent travel booking errors. For example, Hillary booked an official car to take her to Camp David and she ended up at the hairdresser's.
Sorry.
Alan, your question now. How was criticism dished up to the extraterrestrials?
The ghost of Ingrams is inhabiting my body here. William Rees-Mogg, who runs this extraordinary council, which intercedes between us and good taste, reckons that B Sky B, which is owned by Murdoch, which pays Rees-Mogg's salary on the Times, B Sky B is responsible for an enormous amount of violence. It's B Sky B.
It
is. It encourages violence. People come in and say, oh, bloody B Sky B again, and kick a hole in it.
I think that sums it up awfully well. This does refer to Lord Rees-Mogg, chairman of the British Standards Council, whose attack on B Sky B's output was so savage it couldn't be broadcast until after the 9 o'clock watershed. He also explained he doesn't like sets on the television. It can interfere with the signal. The scores at the end of the third round are much the same, really, because Alan and Tony have scored 12, but Francis and Andy are still in the lead with 13. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Derby Evening Telegraph sent in to us by Richard Barnett of Derby.
To my dearest mother on Mother's Day, a perfect model of patience, understanding and selfishness.
Warms the cockles of your heart, doesn't it? Francis, here's your piece of music.
Who work all night and a drink of rum?
Daylight come and me won't go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me won't go home. Lift 6 foot, seven foot, eight foot, punch.
Too loud, man.
Six foot, seven foot, eight foot, punch.
My ears, like my ears. No, hold it, man. It's too shrill, man. It's too piercing.
Oh, well, I don't see why.
No, it's too piercing.
This is some builders employed by McAlpines, the builders.
Right.
And they stood on their building site going, there, oh, there, and all that sort of thing. And they've been fined £9,000 for doing it.
14,000 I've got here.
No, 9,000 in my thing.
Oh, that's you've forgotten the costs.
No, the actual fine was 9,000.
Careful, we're not going to lose a point over this. No. Yeah. Well, no, it's costing us the game, you know. I think it's a great shame that builders are happy for probably, you know, one of the first times in history, and they're not shouting sort of, you know, sexist abuse at girls walking past, you know. But were they singing at 3 a.m? I don't know, maybe that was a...
Well, Daylight Come and We Want to Go Home suggested it was towards dawn, yes. Yeah.
Quite right.
It's always nice to have someone erudite on the programme, isn't it? All them nice long words quite cheers you up.
It's all about builder Sir Robert McAlpine, who was ordered to pay £9,000, although some say £14,000. But I'm not going to argue with you. In fines, after workmen subjected residents to non-stop performances of the Banana Boat Song. The Calypso cacophony proved to be so bad that the 700 hairy brickies have been selected as next year's British entry for the Eurovision Song. Andy, your final question. What added up to much more under the hammer?
Can I just exempt my builder from my remarks about builders in the last one? Because he's got to come back and finish something, and I don't want to... Is that all right?
Yes.
Right. Sorry about that. I think that this is about this 19th century calculator that
Norman
was... That was for auction at Sotheby's, I believe, and they thought it would get about 14,000, 15,000, but I don't want to...
20,000, maybe.
Please, no! That'll take points away again. I'm gonna, and surprisingly, two connoisseurs, or idiots, bid against each other and pushed it up to something in the region of, but I wouldn't like to stick my neck out, 7 million, was it?
Yeah, something 7. Like 7
7 million, million for something that can't do percentages.
And it doesn't even have a printer or batteries with it.
No.
This was the antique calculator sold at Christie's for £7.7 million, plus half a million for the buyer's premium, and 85p for the batteries. The 9x6-inch machine, weighing nearly a stone, was the first ever pocket calculator. Invented by Johann Schuster, and prompted the well-known phrase, "Is that a Schuster in your pocket?" Or are you just pleased to see me?
I bet he never left it anywhere by mistake, though. Yeah. It's that big.
However, Tony, which lost ruler emerged from regal Ramsbottom?
Maggie Parry.
It is.
Inherited something.
That's right.
A small island made of guano.
That's right.
Yes. I think the Queen has actually inherited something similar herself. And it's about the size of Hyde Park.
Redonda.
I was going to say that.
Why is it called cuddly. Redonda?
What?
Redonda.
I don't know. They probably couldn't spell
Barbados. M.H. Spiel, novelist who wrote a novel called Redonda.
Oh, right.
And he originally left it to his literary executor, who passed it to John Wynne Tyson, an extremely nice novelist who's written a book about it. And he thought he owned it. Do you want to know any more about
if that
it?
That's very...
That's worth a point, I think.
If that isn't worth a bonus...
Yes, no, that's...
That's got to be worth a bonus.
I think that's
you
worth
know.
A point.
It's a pack of lies.
Give him a bonus for that. Brilliantly answered. Well done.
I got halfway through his book, but there was something in it and it stopped me.
This is Margaret Parry from Ramsbottom, who has just inherited the throne of the island of Redonda in the Caribbean. The realm is the size of Hyde Park, as you so accurately say, totally uninhabited and covered in bird droppings. So if Queen Maggie ever decides to go walkabout, there'll be very little bowing and a lot of scraping. Alan, your last question for this series. What a shame. Who lost his licence just toying around?
Alan Webb, who went down, he claimed and alleged, to his local supermarket to fill up his nephew's tiny bicycle. It's a 49cc thing, about a foot long. It's like a roller skate. With petrol. Unfortunately, Mr. Webb was so plastered that, having filled it up with petrol, he got on it to ride it back. And he went round and round like a balloon that sort of fizzes around a room until a large number of police got hold of him and charged him with being drunk and disorderly in charge of an electric roller skate. And he lost his licence.
Yeah, absolutely right, in every particular. This was Alan Webb, who was prosecuted for drink driving on a toy motorcycle. Now, that brings us more or less to the end of the contest, but before we reveal the final scores, let's see what the cuttings the team have brought along. Francis, what have you brought for us?
This is from the West Somerset Free Press. The annual finals of the Young Farmers Club's table tennis tournament at Street saw Sarah Rue and Duncan Pearce of Willetton at YFC win the mixed doubles. Natalie Biffin of Wibbliscombe YFC was runner-up in the ladies' singles and finished second in the men's doubles.
Thank you. Andy.
Well, this was, I'm indebted to Mr. and Mrs. Roberts of St. Austell for this, which is from the Western Morning News. A pair of bungling bandits made two ridiculous attempts to raid a Chinese takeaway, a court was told yesterday. St. Austell magistrates heard the pair blundered when they targeted the Chung Hing Chinese takeaway at East Hill in the town on December 19th. Tamlin stormed into the takeaway with a black bobble hat pulled down so far over his eyes that he was unable to see. Undeterred, he shouted at the assistant, Carol Gerry, "Hand over the money!" When she refused, Tamlin stuck a hand in his pocket and replied, "I've got a gun. Why doesn't anyone believe me?" A couple walked in at that point and Tamlin walked out.
Tony, what have you brought for us?
This is a sort of similar, in similar vein, and this has been sent in by Jean Robertson from Trowbridge, and this is from the Trowbridge Times, I think. At a bank break-in, the perpetrator wore socks on his hands to avoid leaving fingerprints, then left them behind, complete with the little name tags that his mum had sewn in for
him. Alan.
Because it's the end of the series, I've riposte all those people who write in and say, you got that thing from the Warramulla Times Picayune, I don't think the newspaper exists, and I think you made all of... None of which is true, because I always get them from real places. But I've got one now they can corroborate for themselves, because it's from Wednesday's Times, about a man called Wolfgang Lotz, who was a master spy of the Israeli Secret Service who operated in Egypt. And it says, the fact that he was never circumcised helped keep his cover intact.
And on that cheery note... Let's look at the final score. Well, as nature has intended all along, it's a draw, both scoring 17. Well done, gentlemen. Before we leave you, let me thank all of you who've sent in cuttings over the weeks. Here's one from the Bedfordshire on Sunday, which has been sent to us by P. Kilday of Risley in Bedfordshire.
Staff watched in amazement when a nonchalant robber strolled into a Bedford shop, ducked under the counter, opened the till and pocketed its contents. One member of staff said afterwards, "We were amazed at the incredible balls this bloke had."
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Wheen, Tony Banks MP and Andy Hamilton. The chairman was Barry Took and the cuttings were read by me, Katrina Young. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Louise Coates.